to add one and one. Hot here is the thing to do. Now some say that screaming one plus one all night means we're thoughtless, cruel, and bad. But kids like you and me, baby, we were born to add. Yes, Joe, we were. As we keep on wandering, we see two trash cans, so we add one and make it three. There's a lot of us adders on the Jersey Shore. Out here it's the thing to be. We'll keep on shouting, one plus two, even though it makes them mad. 'Cause kids like you and me, baby, we were born to add. That's our fate, baby. Take it, class. Spring out of the shadows. Round the corner comes one more, and we scream into that bitter night. Hey, three plus one makes four. Well, they seem to think that we're disturbing the peace, but we won't let them make us sad. 'Cause kids like you and me, baby, we were born sad.
The kids get the parodies on the records that you're doing, like the Springsteen parody that we just heard?
Most of the kids won't, is what I think, and I'm pretty sure they won't, in fact. And I really, one of the important things about writing these songs is making sure that they work on their own as well.
So you're operating on two levels, one level
yes.
for the children and another level for the adults?
A rule that we've always had at Sesame Street, right back to the beginning, is that we want to appeal to adults too, but we should never make it obvious to the kids that there's a joke that they're not getting.
Why not?
Because they won't, they'll get mad and they won't understand the bit. In other words, if you had to understand that that was Bruce Springsteen, or the song made no sense at all, if it wasn't about adding and silly people dancing around on the screen, et cetera, then they'd be saying, we don't understand the song. But the fact is, the lyric of the song, which is very silly and is about adding cars or adding things that go by, and it's an upbeat song that they can enjoy, that's the way they'll enjoy it. And hopefully learn a little bit from. But the parents watching will say, oh my God, they're doing Bruce Springsteen, and they'll enjoy it too, in theory at least. And there are a couple of reasons we want to do that. One of them is that we found, and research has really showed, that over the years, if parents and kids watch together, the kids learn more because they talk to their parents about it and they maybe pay more attention. And also, you know, the fact that their parents are liking it makes them sort of use it as a role model. Beyond that, the parents have to listen to the record if they buy it, if the kids are playing it over and over, and if we can make the parents enjoy it a bit, why not?
Does Springsteen know about it?
He does, yeah. We don't know exactly what he thinks, though we've heard rumors that he likes it. His people, John Landau, I know, does, who is his producer.
Do you have to get any kind of copyright clearance before doing the parody?
You don't, as long as you don't use the melodies. And if you listen to the, if you actually compare them, you'll see they're really quite different. But the arrangements are very similar, of course, and the ideas behind them are very similar.
How did you choose the songs that you were going to use on this?
Well, it's in many different ways. Sometimes when you're writing songs for Sesame Street, they tell you, gee whiz, Cookie Monster's coming in tomorrow and we need a song about food, you know, or that we have, or they'll say Jim Henson just built these little Beatle-type characters that are bugs that look like the Beatles rock group. Can you think of any funny songs to write for them? Or they'll say, gee whiz, we have too many songs about J and not enough about B for the show. So sometimes you got a curriculum goal to go on.
Let's listen to another one of the songs, and this is Count It Higher. How was this one written?
That's actually the first song I ever wrote for Sesame Street. It goes back to the mid-70s. And it was really, it was just a question of trying to do a crazy rock and roll song that had counting in it. And really, it came from the idea that somebody should have to count higher in order to be the loved person. And in fact, writing parodies of those sort of rock and roll love lyrics is one of the things that I enjoy doing. And I think it works in many cases that a song that's about that kind of subject turned around to counting or adding makes it a very silly joke for the adult.
Well, this is performing as Chris in the Alpha Beats, which is you.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
we'll talk a little bit about your rock and roll performance.
Okay.
After we hear from this latest Muppet record, Count It Higher.
You told me you could count. You said there's nothing to it. Well, if you're so good at counting, let me hear you do it.
One.
Latest Sesame Street album, that's Born to Add, performed by Chris and the Alpha Beats, and translated, that's Chris Cerf, who was the person who conceived the album, produced it, and does quite a bit of the performing on it, and wrote nearly all the songs on it. Did you have fantasies, Chris, before you got into this kind of rock performing of being a rock star?
Oh, of course.
Everybody did, right?
And basically, I came from a business that was pretty different, I mean, out of book publishing, and my family grew up in book publishing. And so, you know, it was sort of an urge I never thought I was going to ever able to do anything about. And I have done parody rock songs here and there at the Harvard Lampoon and things, but it never occurred to me I'd really get a chance to do it. And now I just have to accept the fact that my audience is only 4 years old, but if I get by that, I'm a rock star. So it's terrific fun for me, of course.
Have you done it on camera?
Only a tiny bit. There's a little puppet that Jim Henson built that looks a little like me and has glasses and curly blonde hair and bangs a piano. And that's as close as I've gotten, except once in a while I've done it on a talk show or something.
What's your fantasy? What's your rock fantasy now? Who would you be? What kind of performer would you be?
Oh, gosh, it's hard to say. I really still like the sort of old R&B, the kind of Fats Domino style. It's really fun to do. But I don't know. I like being able to do a little bit of all kinds of different things.
What records were you listening to when you were young? Did you have children's records in the house?
I had some, and I think one of the real points that I like about this album is that this album is very different from the kids' records I had. I don't really like the idea of kiddie songs, and I don't think kids do either. There are good ones, of course, but in general, kids know when you're writing down to them. It's true in books, too, that if you're writing something that's very cutesy and obviously very different from something you yourself would listen to, the kids know. And the only difference with these songs from real rock songs that we might write is that they're about something that we want to teach on Sesame Street, or they may have a slightly simpler vocabulary, but they really are not different kinds of songs. And I think kids want to listen to music that sounds like what their parents listen to or their older brothers and sisters listen to.
Yeah, I remember having all these circus comes to town type records, and who knew what a circus was anyways? I think it's supposed to relate to me as a child, but I didn't know what a circus
that's
was.
That's true, and that's another thing that's very true of writing for kids these days, is that the conventions have long outlasted the actual world. There's still any number of books about little farms and circuses and things, and yeah, that's okay, but there are far more books about them than there are actual farms that kids would see.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But, you know, again, you ask me what I like to listen to. I like to listen to real radio stations. As soon as I was, you know, in past six or seven anyway, I was certainly listening to the beginning rock stuff that was on the radio, and I loved the idea that it was music that I had found by myself, not that someone had forced down my throat.
Yeah, that's an interesting switch that I noticed. I think, I know when I was young, reading Mad Magazine and listening to rock and roll on the radio, there was an obvious split between what me and my brother liked and what our parents liked and our musical and reading interests we shared with our peers, but not with our parents.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Sesame Street album, it's really supposed to be a shared experience between adults and children. Do you think that we're at a time where that kind of thing works, and having come from a family where your interests were probably different from your parents, do you still have a part of you that cherishes that separation?
Well, I think kids love to discover something and present it to their parents. I used to love to do that with my dad. I read science fiction a lot as an early teenager, and he didn't dislike it but didn't tend to read it much. So if I found a really great short story in science fiction trend, I could bring that to him, and it would be one he wouldn't know. So I love doing that. Mm-hmm. And that was true of music, too. I would find rock records that I would play for my parents, and they would either occasionally like them or more often absolutely hate them, and either one was fun.
Let's go to another of the records from the Born to Add album. And this is Letter B, and I think everyone will catch on pretty easily to how this fits into the Sesame Street way of teaching. Can you talk a little bit about writing this song, Chris?
Yeah, well, this was a case I referred to a little bit a minute ago, that Tony Geis, who was one of the really good writers at Sesame Street and the Muppet people, had the idea of building a rock group that were literally beetle bugs. You know, they have little antennae, but they have the same kind of haircuts the Beatles did in the early 60s, and they have those same lapel-less suits. And the idea was we could present some Beatle-type songs that had the same educational curriculum as the rest of the show. And we set about trying to think of all the puns we could, and there have been several of these written. A couple of them are on the album. There's one called Hey Food, also, which Cookie Monster comes on and sings with the Beatles, and it's about various kinds of food and their nutritional value. And Letter B, of course, is Let It Be. And there are many other songs that will be appearing later that will be puns on Beatle titles.
Okay, this is written by Chris Cerf, my guest, and it's Letter B from the new Sesame Street album, Born to Add.
When I find I can't remember what comes after A and before C, my mother always whispers, let her be. She told me B starts big and bad, and ball and bat and battery. Yes, ba 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 means let her be. Let her be. Let her be, let her be, let her be. She whispers, ba 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 means let her be. And when I feel downhearted, mother whispers B words constantly. Like big bubble and bubble, let her be. Now in my hour of darkness, there's a sound I know will comfort me. It's the ba-ba-ba-ba-ba of let her be. Let her be, let her be. Let her be, let her be. My mother whispers B words, let her be. Thank you.
Letter B, written by my guest Chris Cerf and featured on the new album of Sesame Street parodies of famous rock songs called Born to Add, which is based, of course, on the Springsteen Born to Run. You know, listening to these parodies, I was thinking about how, as an adult, when I go back and watch some of the Warner Brothers cartoons, I notice all these puns and in-jokes that I didn't get it all when I was a kid, although
right.
I loved the cartoons when I was a kid. And I think what you're doing is really similar.
That's exactly
to that.
Exactly right. Now, again, if the whole bit that you saw in a cartoon was based on that pun, you wouldn't have understood the show and you would have hated it. But that, I think it's really acceptable and a good thing to do as long as it's an added level.
A lot of your professional work now is aimed at children, like the songs that we've been hearing. And I know that you don't have any kids. Do you do something to try to monitor the reactions of children and stay in touch with what they're listening to and thinking?
Yeah, I think, well, in a couple of different ways. Certainly the Sesame Street people do that as a matter of course. We review bits on the show all the time. And Ed Palmer, who is the director of research there, has a really nice technique where they show slides on one wall that have nothing to do with the show, and then they show bits from the show on the front wall, and then they just watch from a one-way mirrored room. They watch the kids' eye movements, and to the degree that the kids begin to turn to the right and take glances at the slides, it means that the material isn't holding their attention. So we do that kind of testing, and certainly, you know, kids hear these songs when, I mean, I see kids a lot of the time. And, you know, I can't say that I child test every song before it goes on the show, but we know that songs with this kind of beat or sung by the Cookie Monster, et cetera, will tend to work. And we find out if they're relatively boring on the show and they stop using them. The good ones last.
Well, we have time for one more selection from Born to Add before we have to conclude. And we're going to hear the Ten Commandments of Health. And I'd really love for you to tell us about the writing of this song.
Well, that was done by... It was really the idea of a fellow named Thad Mumford, who used to be a writer for the Electric Company and later became the head writer and producer of MASH. But Thad is another closet rock and roller. He loves singing 50s doo-wop music. And this song is based on a song that some people will have forgotten, but I've always thought was one of the funniest rock and roll songs ever written, called The Ten Commandments of Love, in which Harvey and the Moonglows would one of them would say a number very loud, and then they tell you what that commandment was, and then the doo-wop group would repeat it. And that song was actually written because we received a new curriculum thing from the educators with 10 things that we wanted to teach kids about health that year. And Thad said, we can do this all in one song, and I'm going to do it tonight, you know. And he wrote this very silly song. It also helps kids with counting because it has the numbers in it, too.
Great. Well, before I hear it, I want to thank you very much for coming to Fresh Air today. Thanks for being here, and good luck with all your projects.
Well, thank you, Derek. It's a lot of fun.
Christopher Cerf has been my guest, and he produced and conceived the Born to Add album, which we've been listening to, and this is a song that he co-authored, The Ten Commandments of Health.
Wash your hands before you eat.
Wash your hands before you eat.
Brush your teeth after every meal.
Brush your teeth after every meal.
Three. See your doctor and your dentist.
See your doctor and your dentist.
We all need checkups, no matter how good we feel. Oh, how lovely life will be if we keep the Ten Commandments of Health.
Commandments of Health.
Cover your nose whenever sneezing.
Cover your nose whenever sneezing.
Cover your mouth when you're coughing too.
Cover your mouth when you're coughing too.
Six.
dress warmly in cold weather.
Dress warmly in cold weather.
And you won't have much coughing or sneezing to do. Oh, how lovely life will be if we keep the 10 commandments of hell. One thing I say a lot, take care of the life you've got. It's such a precious commodity. Exercise to keep in shape.
Exercise to keep in shape.
Bathe or shower when each day is through.
Bathe or shower when each day is through.
Eat lots of fruits and vegetables.
Eat lots of fruits and vegetables.
Give your body all the sleep that it's due. Oh, how grand we're gonna feel, 'cause we'll keep the 10 commandments of
hell. The 10 commandments of health.